Welcome, everybody. I invite you to finish taking your seats, and let's get started. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Now let's have our joke from Ronnie.
All right, I'm Ronnie, I'm an alcoholic. All right, so here we go. A father was trying to teach his young son the evils of alcohol. He put one worm in a glass of water and another worm in a glass of whiskey. The worm in the water lived while the one in the whiskey curled up and died. All right, son, asked the father, what does that show you? Well, Dad, it shows that if you drink alcohol, you will not have worms.
Thank you, Ronnie. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Tanner. Thank you all for joining us tonight. In a minute or two, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all your cell phones, anything that's going to make noise and bother anybody else. Take this time to get connected to God and let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready?
Yes.
Right. If so, let's start the meditation.
Thank you.
So we're going to say the fog log prayer. If you don't know, it's on the screens to your right and left. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who still suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Barry to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Barry. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet, it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means a rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they are presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Barry.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to airplane mode or just turn them off. And now to introduce the speaker. Pat is on his second session, and I don't know if for those of you who are here, it was a great first session, so I'm excited to hear what he has to say tonight. Pat, come on up.
Thank you. I'm excited to hear what I have to say, too. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat. And thanks to the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and for that I'll be forever grateful. AA didn't just save my life, but it gave me one worth living. I absolutely love my life today. I love AA. I love a lot of the A's. I'm a member of some other A's, too, which I love. I got those CAs, those bastard children of AA, you know, that are out there. Where's my crackheads at? Love you guys. I love sponsoring crackheads because you don't have to spend a lot of time on the doctor's opinion, man. I'll tell you that. Let me tell you about an obsession of mine. Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Let me tell you about this physical compulsion. Yes, I got it. You know, that's it. They get that. They get obsession and compulsion like nobody does. And so last week, I think one of the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think the real miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, this whole program's a miracle, but the real miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous and what what binds us together, and we know for sure that what binds us together is not virtue, you know, but what binds us together is our suffering. You know, what binds us together is our common suffering, our common problem. And I always like to start the first session off with how I got here, because that to me is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think the miracle takes place out there on that sidewalk when the newcomer walks up and we stick our hand out and I say, "Hey, my name is Pat," and we start swapping war stories. You know, I hear people criticize, you know, "Oh, that was a friggin' war story." Yeah, I mean, there's 43 war stories in this book for a reason, you know, because you hope that somebody who was sitting out there, or the guy that you're talking to out there that you just met, says, yeah, I did that. Yeah, that happened to me. Yeah, I felt just like that. And you hope that bond is created right there. And like I say, it's a shared suffering that attracts the newcomer, not the God talk. You know, not the, you know, we have this these two cultures in AA, and we have the one that says, "Oh, this is all about God. This is a God." And we know that. And we know that our solution is God. Whatever you think that is, by the way, is what I'm talking about. And then you got that other camp that says, "No, this is all about not drinking. You know, it's just about not drinking one day at a time. No, it's about God. No, it's about not drinking. No, it's about both. You know, it's just about which camp to take them to first, right?" I mean, that's what Bill figured out. We were just talking in the entranceway over there earlier about the history of AA, which I love. And you know, we talk about Bill Wilson failing. What he felt was failing for the first 6 months, trying to help other alcoholics. I mean, he's dragging these drunks off of bar stools and out of the gutters and taking them to the Oxford group meetings. And the Oxford groupers loved that, you know, bringing these guys burning their carpets and spilling drinks all over their room, you know. And he can't get, nobody's buying what he's selling. Nobody wants what he has. And he complains to Dr. Silkworth. He goes to Silkworth and says, "What the heck? You know, nobody wants this thing. I can't give it away." And Dr. Silkworth, "Yeah, I heard what you're doing out there. Stop trying to sell God to these people. Tell them your story, Bill. Tell them how you tried to stop and you couldn't. Tell them how you tried to control it. You had business dealings coming up and you had a couple drinks and boom, you were off on a run and missed the deal or blew the deal. Tell them your story and get them to identify with your drinking and your inability to stay stopped and your inability to control it, and then give them your other medicine," right? And finally, when he's in Akron and he's ready to pick up a drink, by the way, he's 6 months sober and he's ready to pick up a drink, he realizes that although that God experience, that spiritual experience that he had in Towns Hospital was vital to his recovery, what had kept him sober was the 90-some failures. And thank God for us, right? He reaches out to Reverend Tunks, and Reverend Tunks gives him Sam Shepard's phone number, and Sam Shepard gives him Henrietta's Cyberling's phone number, and she calls Dr. Bob, and boom, right? And the first thing Bill does, when he meets Dr. Bob, is tell him his story. First time he got the steps in order. Right? The first time he got them in order. And what happens? The first success. Right? And Dr. Bob says that he was the first guy that ever talked to me that knew what he was talking about, and he was talking from experience, not from knowledge. He was talking from his own experience. Is this phone on? It's not my phone, by the way. Whose phone is it? I assume it's yours. That's funny. We were just talking about that before the meeting. What's really embarrassing is when I get up here and my phone goes off. And I was in a seminar in Rochester, and in the middle of the seminar, it was almost like a God thing, right? I'm talking about my sister who 12-stepped me. I don't know if I mentioned that last week, that my sister, who's 2 years younger than me, who has 2 years less sober than me, took me to my first ever AA meeting, and I'm telling the story about my sister, and my sister calls me on the phone, and it rings during the seminar. It's on CD now. It's on. Anyways, so to me, that's the miracle. Bill figured out that it's about both. It's just about which camp to take them to first, right? We take them to the not drinking camp first, the what happened to us camp first. And then once their head starts going up and down, we reel them in and we tell them how we hope they ask us, what'd you do? You know, what the hell did you do? You know, whatever you did, I need to do. And we tell them about the spiritual solution that we have here. And you know, why do we need a spiritual solution? Why do we need a spiritual solution? Because nothing else worked. Right? Because if it worked, I wouldn't be here. That's just a fact. You know, if some human power could have kept me stopped, then I would be stopped. I didn't get up one morning and say, I'm going to go find God. I'm going to AA. That's not what happened. You know, my recovery was based in what I perceived tragedy. Right? I had just lost my house, assaulted my ex, you know, had a lawsuit, a restraining order, and I'm in a hotel room trying to drink and drug myself to death. You know, it's based in tragedy, and I don't go and say, oh, I got an idea. That's not how it happened. I need help is what happened. And the only thing that came to mind was my sister, you know, and I ended up here. You know, thank God, you know, thank God I ended up here. I mean, now I know I look back. It was by design. I get it, you know, because I get to share this broken shit that I am and help other people overcome their brokenness. I mean, that's just how it works, you know. God uses us, uses our weaknesses for his strength. And so, you know, we're here because there was no other answer. And if we don't buy in, we're bouncing in and out. We're just bouncing in and out. I mean, it's a spiritual program of recovery. That's the good news, bad news, right? The good news is there is no second requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? There's only one requirement for membership, and that's a desire to stop drinking. You don't have to believe in anything. You don't have to do anything. We can't force you to. We can't even kick you out. This is one of the few places you can come and not get kicked out. We can't kick you out. You know, you can't do anything wrong where you're not allowed to come back anymore. Right? That's just the deal. You could be the biggest asshole in the room. We can't kick you out, AA. You know, there's 300 and some other meetings you could go to if you want. You're still welcome if you have a desire to stop drinking. Here's the bad news. It's all about God. It's all about God. This whole thing is about God. And fortunately for us, and the miracle for us, is it's the God of as we understand him, not a God that somebody's shoving down our throat. You know, I think the real miracle in Alcoholics Anonymous takes place in Bill Wilson's kitchen with Ebbie Thatcher, right? I mean, that's the miracle of AA. And by the way, there's two different stories there. You know, there's Ebbie's version of that story and there's Bill's version of that story. Both true, by the way, right? I mean, when I tell my story, you know, look, AA was oral history up until 1939, right? It was all spoken history. And it was as we perceived it. Whoever was telling the story, it was their perception of the story, right? When I tell you how Brian and I met back in 91, my story about how Brian and I met and Brian's story about how we met and my sister's story about how we met are all different stories. They're all true. They're all true from their perception, but they're different. You know, I talk about standing there and Brian approaches me and asks me if I wanted to hear about the program, right? Brian tells the story. I'd been to a big book seminar. I wanted to see if this shit worked. He looked like a likely suspect. So I asked him if he wanted to hear. He took me to his meeting. My sister says, I told Brian, that's my brother over there. You need to go help him. Please go talk to him. So it's three stories, all true. You know, Ebbie says Bill threw him out. Right? Bill said, enough of this shit. Bill was, you know, Ebbie's telling him about, Ebbie's speaking Christianity to Bill Wilson. He's laying a first century Christian message on Bill Wilson. Well, he's selling Jesus Christ to Bill. That's what he's selling. Bill don't want to hear it. Bill's anti-religious. He doesn't want to hear it. And Ebbie says that the more I taught, the more I preached, the drunker Bill got. You know, because Bill's sitting there drinking gin and pineapple juice while Ebbie's trying to sell God to him, right? And Ebbie says Bill threw him out. Right? But what Ebbie says, and both stories, by the way, are in the book. Ebbie says Bill followed him to the train station. Took him to the train station with him, and Ebbie said that before he got on the train, Bill grabbed him by the shoulder and said, Ebbie, I don't know what's happened to you, but I need what you have, right? You don't want to hear the religious aspect of it. And the miracle takes place there, right? Why don't you choose your own conception of God? And Bill says, I can do that, That melts that icy shadow that I've been living under, that, right? And all of a sudden, Bill says, hey, alcoholics like their own conception of anything, right? If it's my idea, I'm in, right? And that's really what he did. He opened the doorway for all of us. He opened a doorway so wide that any of us could walk through it, right? And that was the whole idea of chapter 4, was to funnel us all into a place where we could all buy in. You know, that there was no forced beliefs. And we don't tell you how to believe. We just ask, are you willing to? That's all. Are you willing to go from no to maybe? You know, are you willing to go to maybe to yes? You know, are you willing to just come off of where you're at and take one step? Why? Because you're dying. Because you're dying. Those that become, and only us would have to debate whether we want to live a spiritual life or die an alcoholic death. I mean, that's like, only an alcoholic would ponder that, right? I mean, that's a no-brainer to the real world. Like, you want to live by spiritual principles, you want to die. Oh, I'll take the spiritual principle door. You know, we're looking for another way out. Like, is there a third option? You know, is there a door number three? You know, is this going to be a quick, painless death? Or, Ronnie and I were talking about that on the way over here, right? We're not afraid of freaking death. It's life that scares the shit out of me, right? I welcomed it. You know, take me out. I don't want to deal with it. And I've been there in sobriety, by the way. I've been there in sobriety. And that's a scary place to be when you know alcohol is not an answer and you don't want to play the game anymore. You know, you don't want to play. And you either, and we'll talk about this later, you either have a breakthrough or a breakdown, one or the other. You either grow or you go. And that's the deal here. You know, but yeah, you know, I want to read something real quick. Finally remembered it. It's a fairly new pamphlet, and I'm not going to read the whole pamphlet. Thank you. It would have been a good way to eat up this hour, but. And I'm only going to read a part of it. I'm only going to read. It's called the God Word. It's a fairly new pamphlet, right? I'm only going to read the part that Bill wrote, right? And Bill writes this: we have atheists and agnostics. We have people of nearly every race, culture, and religion. In AA, we are supposed to be bound together in the kinship of common suffering. Consequently, the full individual liberty to practice any creed or principle or therapy, whatever, should be the first consideration for us all. Let us not, therefore, pressure anyone with our individual or even our collective views. Let us instead accord each other the respect and love that is due to every human being as he tries to make his way toward the light. Let us always try to be inclusive rather than exclusive. Let us remember that each alcoholic among us is a member of AA, so long as he or she declares, whatever you do, please don't let someone else's religious beliefs prevent you from finding the solution that is available to you through Alcoholics Anonymous. That's our co-founder, you know, stating that don't let religion or God scare you out of here. Right? It's your conception. And a matter of fact, Bill opens up the door even wider in the 12 and 12, where he talks about using the group as a power grid. I like to call it a collective conscience. A collective conscience, right? Because I know you guys feel that when you walk in here. You know, I know anytime I walk into a room where there's two or more alcoholics gathered in the name of recovery, that there's a power there. I feel it. Now, can you sustain recovery based on that power? Our book says no. Now, the thing that we have that our founders didn't have is 380-some groups in Broward County facilitating over 700 meetings, right? They didn't have that. They had one meeting a week down in Akron, and they're traveling from Cleveland to Akron or wherever they're getting sober, and one in New York. And people are traveling to get there, and it's once a week. And you know what they're doing the rest of the week? They can't wait till the freaking meeting. All they talk about is, we're going to the meeting Wednesday, right? Who's going to the meeting? Are you going to the meeting Wednesday? They talk all week long about going to the meeting on Wednesday. You want to have coffee and talk about going to the meeting on Wednesday? Let's get together, have coffee, talk about let's go to the meeting on Wednesday, and we'll drive down together. That's what they were doing, right? But we could just pop into meetings anywhere we want, anytime we want. Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. So we have an advantage, and it almost appears as if you could stay sober on the fellowship. It has an appearance until the tragedy strikes again, right? Until the crap hits the fan again, till the boss lays you off, till the girlfriend says she don't like you anymore, the boyfriend says I found another, you know, when something like until a health issue shows up, you know, somebody close to you passes away from this illness or some other illness, till that shows up. And then the fellowship's not powerful enough to overcome the obsession to drink. Because my mind still knows that that booze works today. And I don't usually say how, I mean, I've been around a few years. You know, very rarely do you hear me say my sober date because it's not relevant. It's how well did I work this thing today, right? There's people in this room that have less than a year that have worked a better program certain days than I have. You know, it's all a recommitment on a daily basis. You know, the only thing that I have, the only advantage that I have over the newer person in this room is that I've weathered storms over the years without picking up a drink. It doesn't mean I'm any more sober or that I'm practicing these principles any better than anybody else. It just means that I've been able to weather the storms. I've had a lot of breakthroughs and very few breakdowns. You know, and that's the difference. You know, that is the difference. So, you know, it appears that you can stay sober on the fellowship. It gives us an appearance, and we start feeling better, right? I mean, we get some information about the obsession and the allergy. We get some information about turning it over, which we'll get to when we get to the third step, because, you know, people are saying, oh, I'm trying to get step three before I move on to step four. I'm working on turning it over. I didn't even know what that meant. You know, turn it over. Shit, I need an attorney. What are you talking about? You know, turn it over. You know, I would share about my lawsuit, my restraining order, and go, you need to turn that over. You know, no, I need a good attorney. That's what I need. But we learn that. We learn the act of turning it over is 4 through 9. That's the act of turning it over. It has nothing to do with step 3. It's just a decision to turn it over. I don't know what I'm doing there. You know. But this idea about why, you know, William James says it, there's no requirement for membership here, right? We got that. We're clear on that. There's no requirement for membership here. You know, there's a requirement for recovery. There is and I'm just telling you right up front. If you want to recover, if you want what the people who have worked, if you want what the 2.4 million recovered alcoholics in the world won't have, you got to do that, what they did. There's a requirement, right? And the first step is a requirement. It's usually not a second step problem. It's usually a first step problem. I'm just not beat up enough. I'm just not beat into submission yet. I'm just not willing to believe yet. I'm still going to try to do this on my own because I'm just not down with this spiritual stuff. I'm just not down with this religious thing that you got going on or this cultish thing that you got going on here. You know, I don't even know if I want to be part of this. I can't put that on any applications for work. Nobody thinks it's a good thing. You know, of course, nowadays it is kind of cool to be in recovery. But you know, as soon as I say I'm in CA, they grab their purse. You know, I mean, it's like. My mom doesn't even mention that. I mean, she doesn't. I told her I spoke at the CA International. I'm going to speak at the CA International Convention this year. And she went, oh, that's nice. Yeah. But she don't share that with any of her friends. You know, she would much rather that I be part of a church or something than AA. But she loves the fact that I've recovered. She loves that fact. But she don't brag about this. I don't brag about it. I don't put this on a job app. You know, what have you accomplished? 28 years of sobriety, you know. it's an iffy thing, you know. So, you know, are we going to buy into that solution or not? I mean, are we the real deal or not? You know? One of the gifts that I have, two boys that are phenomenal, and I'll speak a lot about them as we go on. One, in particular, when we get maybe later on in the ninth step or something. But I get to visit my son. When I get to visit my son in Jacksonville, he goes to this non-denominational Christian church. And they stole a lot of our stuff, by the way. They stole a lot of our stuff, you know. So Pastor Russ, who I love. Who would want to do that, right? Who would want to go to church, right? I really love going to his church, but who would want to do that? Who would want to go sit for an hour and listen to somebody talk about spiritual principles? Who would want to do that for an hour? Everybody freaking sitting here, right? But, oh, no church. No, we're not doing that. You know, we're not going to do that thing. And I'm not promoting any church. I'm not promoting anything. I'm just saying that so the church, it was their anniversary of their church. And two of the founders, two of the original founders, were there to talk about their experience in starting the church. One of them is Mark Brumell, and the other one is Tony Bocelli. If anybody that follows football knows who they are. If you don't, Mark Brumell was the quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Tony Bocelli was a linebacker for them. And they met each other after being traded, and the expansion team started in Jacksonville. And they were on the stage talking about what the most important thing in the founding of this church and this fellowship is. A fellowship, you know, it's a fellowship of men and women who practice spiritual principles. I mean, that's what they do, right? And what was the most important thing in your life? And Mark Brumell shared first, and he said, the most important thing in my life was developing a relationship with Tony Bocelli. He says, because Tony and I got to know each other so well that when I wasn't feeling good and when things weren't going right, Tony could read my face and say, what's going on, Mark? Let's talk. And he would pull me aside. And he said, that literally saved my life at times and saved my marriage and saved my football career. And they went to Tony Bocelli and they asked him the same question, Mark Brumell asked the same question, and he said that it was Tony. And, you know, Tony said it was Mark, and Mark said it was Tony, the most important things in their life, to have this kinship, this fellowship that they had, this bond that they had, because they suffered from similar issues. And they recovered from those issues together in that fellowship. And you know what hit me? Who's your Tony Bocelli? I'm asking you guys, and I'm rhetorically, who is your Mark Brumell? Who is your Tony Bocelli? Because you need that when you get here. You need that because you need this fellowship. We're talking about two powers here. We're talking about the power of the fellowship, and we're talking about the power of this spiritual experience, this spiritual awakening, this personality change that's going to take place through the steps. But while we're going through the process, who's your Mark Brumell? Who's your Tony Bocelli? Who's your go-to guy? Who's your girl? Who's your girl when the shit hits the fan? You're calling him up. Man, you're not going to believe what he said. You know, he likes somebody else's posts on Facebook. It's bullshit. You know, yeah, he didn't even respond to my text, but he liked Shirley's post. Yeah. I think he's seeing Shirley. You know, I mean, who's your go-to? Right? And I looked back at my recovery when I started this thing. I had those guys. I had those guys. I had Billy G. I had Sean L. I had Brian H. Those were my Tony Bocelli's. Those were my Mark Brumell's. Those guys were in my life constantly. You know what I wanted to know? Where were they? Where are you? You know, Brian sponsored me. When he was going out with his girlfriend, I was pissed. Like, Jesus, don't I mean nothing? I thought I was the most important person in the room. He's with that girl, you know? I'm serious. I mean, that's how important it was. I needed those guys in my life. I needed to talk. Billy and I, we laugh about it today. We used to stand in front of the bottom line in Deerfield till 2, 3 in the morning talking about my divorce one more freaking time, you know? Like, and Billy would just stand there, and Billy would share his marriage issues and his issues with his ex-wife, and I would dump my problem. I'm talking till 2, 3 in the morning. We would talk for hours and hours on end. Great times. I mean, he got me through those moments while somebody was trying to connect me to God. While somebody was trying to connect me to this power. And when I talk about I chased this thing, I chased them. I wanted to know where Billy was. I want to know, where are you? What do you mean you're going out with a girlfriend? What? Well, where's Brian? Well, I don't know. You have to call Brian. All right, I'll call Brian. You know, where's Sean? What's Sean doing? And I knew Sean. Sean never had a relationship. So Sean, I knew Sean was always available. Sean was like me. You date him for a few while and then he just hates you, you know. It's another issue. It's an outside issue, right? But that's what baffles me. I mean, that's how badly I needed this. And I don't even know what I wanted, but I knew I needed this. And I was dying inside, because I'm untreated. Until I'm connected here, I'm untreated. That's alcoholism, by the way. That I can't believe this bitch is doing this to me. I can't believe this boss is treating me like this. I need to run this company. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. You know, I come in here and tell you what a bunch of losers you are. I can't believe you guys want me to be part of this bullshit. Right? And I'm saying that like I'm calling you losers. Right? I have a restraining order, a lawsuit, assault and battery charges. Right? I'm living in my mother's back room. Right? She took the car and the house and custody of my two boys. Right? And I'm calling you losers. Right? I was chasing this thing. And when I talk about chasing speakers, I was chasing speakers. I want to know where Ben is tonight. Where's Dion? Where's Dave T? Where's Father Bob H? Where's Mike L speaking tonight? You know, somebody. I want to go hear somebody that has what I want or what I needed. You know, and I that's what I did. And if I didn't know where those guys were speaking, I knew that Billy and Sean and Brian were chasing the same thing. And wherever they were, I wanted to be where they were. That's how you get connected here. How bad are you in or not? Are you in or not? Right? But it takes tragedy to get that kind of commitment. It's not like I was forced to my knees. I didn't go willingly. I came here because I had nowhere else to go, right? And I was scared to death what was going. I couldn't be alone. I hated it. I wanted out when I got here. I attempted suicide 2 years before I came into this program. Liquor was my solution. If you pull my solution away, I'm suicidal. I don't do well. I'm an emotional freaking cripple. I am. I don't deal with emotions. Alcohol allowed me to deal with life. There's Bill calls it a spiritual malady, which we'll talk about later. It's an internal condition that needed treated. And now I got nothing to treat it with. I got guys, you know, I called one of my guys the other day. I'm speaking, I'm doing a series up in Crossroads, and I asked him, you know, I'm going away up Crossroads. Am I going to see you at Crossroads tonight? He says, not sure. I'm saying, really? Because I have a stipulation. If you ask me to sponsor you, I got three rules. That's it, three rules. You know, one is, if you've asked me to sponsor you, you've asked me to take you through the steps. That's what you've asked me to do. That's my job. If you don't want to work the steps, we're done, right? That's just the deal. I'm not a guy that can have coffee with you every day. We want to get together before a meeting or after a meeting. I'm good with that, but I'm busy, so I'm just not that guy. If you need somebody to have coffee with you 3-4 times a week, I'm not that guy, right? But I will get you through the steps quickly, right? And the other two are simple, right? Dom knows, you know, the other two are simple. If you call me, leave a message, right? That's a rule. Because I need to know the urgency of the call. You know, I'm at work. I'm with customers. If it's just checking in, I'll call you when I'm on the road again. If it's my hair's on fire, I'm on the edge, I'm leaving the customer and I'm going out and I'm making the phone call. And the other is, you have to chase me. You have to find me. I'll tell you where I'm at every day of the week. Damn near every day of the week I'm in a meeting. It's not hard to find. I'm pretty predictable. Right? Monday night home group. Tuesday night step workshop. Wednesday night, Crossroads. Thursday night, Alcoholics and God. Friday night, First Step. Easy to find. Saturday and Sunday, I try to reserve for my wife. You know, trying to keep my marriage together this time. Do something different. I asked him, where are you going? He said, he didn't show up at Crossroads. I said, where'd you go? I went to 101. Who spoke there? I don't know. What'd they talk about? I don't know. What'd you go there for? Why'd you go? I mean, did you need to get a paper signed or something? Why? Why go? If you have, you know, I don't get it. Just to go? You think that you're going to go there and something's going to rub off? No, I get it. They don't drink there. You know, if you want to pick up a drink, they don't drink there. You know? That's fine, but man, what's your mission? What do you want out of this program? What are you looking to get out of this program? Do you think just not drinking and going to meetings is gonna get you sober? Is gonna get you recovered? You think you're going to have a spiritual awakening just not drinking and going to meetings? I mean, where does that message come from? You know, it just baffles me. It's like hanging out at an airport and think you're going to become a pilot. You know, it's like, you know, going to PTA meetings doesn't make you a parent. You know, going to AA meetings doesn't make you recovered. It just doesn't. It takes effort. You got to want it. That's like a requirement, man. Bill Wilson gets the first two steps from William James out of Variety of Religious Experiences, probably in Lecture 9. Variety of Religious Experiences is a tough read, by the way. I don't know if anybody's read it, but it's a rough read. I had to get the CD, you know, and even then I got to rewind. What the hell did he just say? You know, but it's a series of lectures. And what William James says that there's requirements for a spiritual experience. One is facing an insurmountable obstacle, right? Facing an insurmountable obstacle and admitting it. It's not enough just to face it. We see people facing it and bouncing in and out of here constantly. They face it, but you got to admit it. And the second requirement is that to appeal to a deity, to appeal to a higher power for a solution. To appeal, and Bill gets it from him. That's where he gets the first two steps, to appeal to something greater than human power for a solution. Right? If human power could keep me sober, you don't think my freaking children would have kept me sober? You don't think my exes would have kept me sober? Wasn't that I didn't love them? Yeah. You don't think my mother, literally in tears, you're killing me? What about my grandchildren? Yeah, you're right. You're right. Damn it, I mean it this time. Okay? Your Honor, seriously. Okay? I talked about my first felony, right? Let's say this. The second fact in chapter 2, right? The first fact is this. The fact is that I've lost the power of choice in drink. That I can't bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the pain and suffering of a week or a month ago. I'm telling you, I couldn't bring into my consciousness the pain and suffering of this morning. Okay? She said she was leaving this morning if I come home drunk one more time. And I'm halfway to work and I go, what the hell did she mean by that? You know? What the hell? She can't be serious. Right? Our bags are packed. But no way. No way she's done. You know? And anyways, I'm just going to have three tonight and I'm going straight home. You know? I mean, I had custody of my oldest son. If you drink, you're going to lose custody of your son. You think that would be sufficient, right? I think I mentioned last week at 19 years old, I got my first felony, right? I was framed, by the way. So I end up the first time ever in the Allegheny County Jail, right, in Pittsburgh, downtown Pittsburgh. First time ever in the population. Now, I shared with you guys how I dressed at the time, right? I have my platform shoes on with my bell-bottom pants with my paisley shirt. I'm a miniature John Travolta. I'm 125-pound John Travolta, right? And my hair's down to my shoulders, and I look like a date in jail, right? And I have never been so scared in my life. I have never been so scared in my... I mean, I literally cried at the arraignment the next morning. You know, I wanted... I swear to God, I swear on my mother, my children, you let me out of here. I will never touch another drug. You will never see me again. Right? You know I was drunk before I got home? And you guys understand that. You guys get that. Our book refers to that. It says even when we intentionally go out and get drunk, the reasons why we did, in the light of the consequences... Don't make sense. Because we do. Sometimes we just, F it. We say shit like this. I don't care. You know you're going to jail tomorrow if you drink. I don't care. How could you not care? The normies say that. Well, how could you not care? Right? You guys say, yeah, I understand. I couldn't take the pressure. I got a freaking hearing now. You know, I got a preliminary hearing. Then we got the trial, and I'm charged with a felony, and I'm going to need a pretty good attorney. I don't have that kind of money. Where am I going to? And the trial date is like, oh my God, I just need to take the edge off. I just need to take the edge off. And you guys, you understand. You guys know exactly what I'm talking about. The normies, they don't know. They don't get it. They don't know. What, are you kidding me? How could you? I used to hear that all the time. How could you? My ex used to say that all the time. That was like, and I, you know what? I think I shared with you guys. I didn't come home Christmas Eve once, right? And I got a bottle of champagne to celebrate Christmas Eve with my wife. And then I opened that shit. Just to see if it was any good. What a mistake, you know? Then it's 8 ball, and I show up early Christmas Day to put the stuff together, and I hear this. How could you? Man, I heard that a lot. You know what I had? I'm a pretty smart guy, I think. You know, I think I'm pretty intelligent. And I thought for a second, and I went, I don't know. Because I didn't know. I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know about an allergy and an obsession. I didn't know that there was a physical compulsion once I started. I didn't know. I didn't know why I didn't go home until I knew why I didn't go home. Yeah. So if this fellowship was sufficient, and if human power was sufficient, I'd be stopped. Right? I would have stopped a long time ago before I got here. I could not. The fact is, I had lost the power and choice. Right? I'm going to read a paragraph. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether, right? Because the allergy means nothing if I never put a drink in me, right? So just don't pick up a drink. That's the normies talking, right? Well, just don't drink. You know, it's like the jaywalker. Just don't jump out in front of the freaking car. You know, you won't get hit. Right? I love the next line. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop, right? So we're assuming that everybody that comes in here and picks up a white chip has a desire to stop. That's not always true, but I think it is in that moment, by the way. I think everybody that does that walk of shame, that, you know, that's, I think they mean it. I do. It's just that 5 minutes later, the emotions get so overwhelming that I just can't do it. I just can't. Yeah, I meant it 2 minutes ago. You know, I meant it yesterday. But you don't understand. You don't feel what I feel. And they don't. We don't. I don't know how you feel. You know, I know how I feel. And that's all that's important, by the way, is how I feel. You know, yeah, I sympathize with you, but let me tell you how I feel. You know, and that's what's important. And my feelings are so freaking overwhelming that I can't deal with it. You know, and we try other stuff. I mean, we go on sex runs or, you know, spending sprees. You know, we go on all kind of other stuff. You know, we try other stuff, but it just isn't enough, you know. And my mind says, I know what works. Remember that bottle of Moon's Farm, Strawberry Hill? They got better shit than that out there now. Whether such a person can quit on a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent which they have already lost the power to choose whether to drink or not. Okay. And they explained to us 10, 12 pages before that on page 21, right? 13 pages before that, right? The difference between the non-alcoholic and the alcoholic. Right? There's a difference. A difference between the addicted and the dependent, right? There's a difference. Right now, they talk about the moderate drinker. They talk about my brother who had skipped in our family, you know, who can take it or leave it. He likes the effect. He likes the comfortable, relaxing feeling he gets after a couple beers or, you know, whatever. But that's, he doesn't like the slightly tipsy, out of control feeling. He likes to maintain control. You know, he doesn't like it. It doesn't. He'll get sick. You know, he doesn't get the hot, intense, get up and go do something kind of feeling that we get, right? He gets depressed. We get excited, right? Well, it's on. It's on, right? He wants to go to bed. We want to go to town, right? I mean, that's the difference. That's the abnormal reaction, right? That's my brother, and he doesn't like it. My sons are the same way. They don't like being out of control. They want to be in control of what's going on. I may have broke that chain, by the way, and thank God. You know, I got two boys who, they know and they've heard from me. They got the bullet. We have a genetic bullet that runs through the family. There's no doubt about that. My tree's got bottles hanging off it. You know, and you know, those two, they get it, but they know they none of they have never driven drunk. You know, they know the deal. They don't like it. They like being in control. Right? I feel in control when I'm drunk. I feel out of control sober. I don't do sober. Right? So we get that guy. We get that guy. You know, the one, the stirrer. You know, that just keeps stirring their freaking drink and doesn't drink it. You know, the person that takes a sip and then lets it sit there and the ice melts in it and they throw it away. That guy. You know? My mom, that's what she does. You know, mom, drink it. Damn it. It's, you know, the ice is melting. You know? It still bothers me. Yeah. I don't know why. It's like a waste. You know, it's like abuse. You know? But then there's the guy, my buddy Jimmy D. Right? I always love to tell the Jimmy D story. Anybody that's heard me do these step series has heard Jimmy D's story. And Jimmy D and I drank and drugged together like troopers in Pittsburgh, man. We ran together, man. We had a blast together. Right? And then I moved to Florida. He follows me to Florida. Right? Because we're buddies. Right? And we ran here, man. And Jimmy drank like I did, and Jimmy drugged like I did, and we had a hell of a time together. Right? And one night, we're in this biker bar in Margate, and I don't know why we're in a biker bar, neither one of us had bikes, but, you know, I think we were, you know, some nights you just want confrontation, right? Anybody else like that? It's like sometimes you just want to kick some ass or get your ass kicked, you know what I mean? You want to feel different, you know? I need to let some steam off, and even if it's me getting my ass kicked, I'm all right with that, you know? And we're sitting there, and Jimmy gets a call from his wife, and she said, if you don't get your ass home right now, I'm leaving. Jimmy went freaking home. Sissy. He went home. You know, I haven't seen Jimmy since. Right? He was my boy. Right? He was given a sufficient reason to stop or moderate, and he went home. You know, he's still married today, like, I think it's 35 years later. Right? I'm on my third, you know, because nobody tells me what to do. I'm a grown-ass man, you know what I mean? Like, you ain't my mother, for God's sake. Just back off, right? You know, back off. You want to leave? Leave. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. You know, don't pack. You're packing. No, wait, hold on. I didn't really mean leave, leave. I meant, like, leave me alone type of thing, you know, because we're like that. I mean, I hate people, but I don't like being alone. I mean, that's a freaking problem right there, you know. I like to be held when I'm isolating, for God's sake, you know. Yeah. He went home. You know, he's got three beautiful kids. He's got beautiful. Now, I guarantee you that Jimmy shook, rattled, and rolled for a few days. I guarantee you he detoxed. But Jimmy was addicted. And everybody that drinks long enough or drugs long enough becomes addicted. Right? And they may even need hospitalization, our book talks about. They may need detox. But they leave detox and they go, whew, not doing that shit again. You know, that's it for me. I'm done. Right? But what about the real alcoholic? Right? I'm a dependent. I needed liquor at 5. That's just the truth. Right? I am dependent on liquor. I can't do life without liquor. I don't do emotions. I emosh. That's what I do. I over-emosh, right? I over-feel everything. It's just the thing, you know? And the problem is that my feelings dictate my actions and my behavior. That's it. Or my reaction, right? I don't... That's third step stuff. We'll talk about that whenever I get there. I mean, that's like, you know, yeah, my actions turn to emotions, which dictates my reaction. That's usually how that happens. And I don't do... I'm dependent on it. I'm the guy that gets detoxed and then gets high. Like we were talking about that last week. We were talking about that on the way. I'm the guy that would spend $90,000 for 3 months of treatment and leave and go, I need to get high. You know? The addicted goes there and spends 3 months and leaves and goes, never going to do that again. You know, never going to do that. We can't do life without it. And there's the power of choice. I've lost the power of choice. If I don't do something about that, that's the pattern we were talking about last week. Restless, irritable, and discontent. There's the key. Emotional cripple, you know, dependent, don't know how to do life without some kind of medication in my system. You know, can't be alone. Right? What's the song about? That was me, like, it does incredibly tragic things while drinking, right? It's always more or less insanely drunk, right? Always getting tight at the wrong moments, like Christmas Eve, you know? Just that's me, you know, hiding bottles around. I should be sleeping for days, but I'm up the next morning, man. And I'm off to do my thing, you know. I'm gonna get an eight ball and go to work. That's what I'm gonna do, man. You know, do it all over again. And then most mornings I get up and say, "Shit, that's it for me, not today." You know, that lasted about 10 minutes. How many used to get home every night? So I'm going straight to bed. You know, get up in the mornings and I'm going straight to bed tonight, man. That's it. I'm going straight to bed. And what about 4? I used to call it beer 30. You know, right around beer 30, you go, "Well, let me just have a couple," you know. And boom, I'm off to the races. Who knew? You know, who knew? Yeah. So the tremendous fact is that we found a common solution, right? Our suffering binds us together. The tremendous fact is that we've found a common solution here, and that's the great news that we carry here. Look, the bond is created by the suffering, but the great news and what we should be shouting from the hilltops is that we have a solution here, right? But you gotta want it. You gotta want to be here. You can't just need to be here. I think everybody that comes here regularly knows they need to be here. They've identified. But you got to want it. You got to want to be part of this deal. You got to go from, "I can't believe that all these people do is go to meetings and eat." You know? You got to go from that to, "I can't wait to go to the meeting and eat." You know? And that's what happens, right? I mean, anybody who's been around here for a while, that's what happens, right? Like, you're pissed off and all they do is go to meetings and Denny's. And now I can't wait to go to the meeting and go to Floridian. You know? Like, it just becomes fun. It becomes a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I thought you guys were sick. I thought, you're like, how could you have a life beyond your wildest dreams? You don't have a girlfriend or a car. You know, I didn't get it. All you do is go to meetings and Denny's. You know, like, what are you talking about? Are you delusional? And now I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. And you know when that happened? When I didn't have the girlfriend, and when I lost the car, and when I got the lawsuits and the restraining orders, and I started to not drink and go to Denny's and work this program. And that's the thing. Don't drink and go to meetings, but tell them the rest of the freaking story. Right? Don't drink, go to Denny's, get a sponsor, work the steps. Tell them the whole story. Meeting makers make it. Yeah, people who get a sponsor, work the steps, and go to meetings, they make it. That's just how that works. Yeah. It takes work. Yeah. The solution is the great fact, right? The great fact is this and nothing less, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences that have revolutionized our lives, right? The central fact of my life today is that God has entered my heart and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous and is commencing to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know what I couldn't do for myself? I couldn't stay stopped. I was willing to trade everything. I did, and I said, "I don't care. Because I can't live without booze. I'm willing to give that stuff up." It's sad, right? It's sad. There's a lot of regrets. But I couldn't live without it. And now it seems like without any effort on my part, you know, I haven't obsessed about a drink or a drug since I did my fifth step. You know, I'm not telling you I haven't thought about it. I have. I've had stuff happen in my life, and my mind reaches back to that moment when that half a bottle of Boone's Farm gave me that magic. You know, I know there's magic in that bottle, but you know what? I found magic in another source. You know, I reach for the spirit instead of the spirits now. It's a whole different deal. You know, it's a whole different deal, and I get the same relief there that I got out of the bottle. That's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the solution that we have to offer here. You know, are you in? You know, are you in? Will you have it? Of course you will. Everybody gets it that does it. I'm not one of them success rate. I think the success rate conversation is bullshit, you know, especially now when we have treatment centers coming here and we have the courts sending people here. And by the way, you can blame Dr. Bob for that. Read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. He went to the jails and said, "Send them to us. We can help them." And, you know, and that's cool. I mean, why not? Plant the seed. Hopefully, what's the book say? Hopefully we run their drinking, you know. Hopefully they think of us the next time they're throwing a few down, you know. And the son of a bitches were right, you know. Just ruin their high, you know. But that's the deal. I mean, everybody, I think... I think everybody that follows the specific, precise, clear-cut, exact directions gets it. I think we're 100% successful. Those who don't, and by the way, live it in 10 and 11 and 12, right? They take the design for living and they practice it in 10, 11, and 12. I think they all stay sober permanently. They all recover. But there, nobody wants, not a lot of people want to do that. So we're in the single digits when it comes to how many people come to AA. And I don't think it's fair to say of the people who come to AA, how many recover versus how many actually work the steps and practice the steps in their daily life, how many are successful. I think it's 100%. Thanks for letting me be here tonight. Mm-hmm. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. Oh.
Let's go ahead and thank the speaker one more time. And now we're going to have our secretary's report from Ryan.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Jack to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Hey, Jack.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for a lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was our problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Consequently. 1940s-style big book sponsorship from forward of the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Nice. And then is there anyone in the room that needs a sponsor, if you could please raise your hand? All right, if you're too shy to raise your hand, just see any one of those people that just had their hands raised and they can help get you back to God. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship starts at 6:30, and then the Big Book study starts at 7:15, and that's upstairs in the same building. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, little red books, and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back. And we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be ready to, and be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. And then we have some announcements. Broward County Intergroup. You can get like literature, medallions, kind of one-stop shop for anything AA. It's got the hours up there, ways to contact them. If you're looking for volunteer opportunities, there's a couple up here. Broward County Institutions Committee. They have monthly business meetings, and the next one coming up is November 9th. So if you're looking for a way to do some service. Gratitude dinner planning meeting is Sunday, October 27th at 1 p.m. Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church. And early timers meeting is going to be Saturday. That's over. And that's this meeting. All right. One last announcement. If you smoke or vape, there's buckets set up down here, so if you could just take it down there. They have the Boy Scouts upstairs, so if you don't want them bumming cigarettes from you, just go down there and you'll be okay. That's all I got. I'll see you next week.
All right, so we have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, and for those of you who wish to thank the speaker, please line up at the center aisle after we close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. These possessions that I had amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them, 'cause they won't profit me anything. Yes, the sun
shining through. But when you crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope you will smile for you.
Michael Chase. Here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Lifted, I see the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way, flowers blooming all the time right outside my door. But never before I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when he give away, and it's just about to start. So I face each day brand new way, show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms, and here in this moment that we share, nothing could come in. Lessons when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's alright. Oh man, going on 10 years old that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I've worked so hard for see the walls be bought and sold, so Lord, shine a light on me tonight. 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 On your way
Shut up!